Chapter 9. Managing Your Thoughts. How to Change the Way You Think. If you change the way you look at things, the things you look at will change. Dr. Wayne Dyer, author. As we covered in Chapter 2, external events and situations create internal representations, that is, thoughts, inside people's heads. These thoughts take the form of pictures, sounds, including self-talk and feelings. By changing certain aspects of these three representational systems relating to the experience, you can change the way you think about a situation or event, which in turn changes the way you respond. This chapter covers how to do this. The technique you will learn is relevant for individuals rather than for organizations, although usually if individual employees improve performance, there are benefits for the organization. Why is this so useful? You can use this approach to help yourself in several ways. To feel more confident about interviews, presentations, and meetings with important clients or colleagues. To feel more positive about certain work activities that you might not necessarily like, such as writing reports, cold calling, or submitting work to deadlines. One student on an NLP practitioner course won $750,000 of business from a blue-chip company by using this process for cold calling. To feel comfortable around people you might have previously felt intimidated by because of their personality or job title. Background. As you remember from chapters 2 and 6, in NLP, we refer to our senses as representational systems. They are also known as modalities. When people think of a situation, they will instantly have either a picture of it, sounds associated with it, or feelings about it. Usually, the internal representation will be in 1, 2, or even 3 of these modalities, and will often happen so automatically that they will not be aware of it. If we just take the visual modality for a moment, the picture will have certain qualities, such as size, big, medium, or small, brightness, bright or dim, and movement, still, slow, medium, or fast. These finer distinctions of the modalities are called submodalities, and their function is to help us interpret and give meaning to the experience. For example, submodalities inform us whether we like or dislike an activity, such as cold calling or chairing meetings. By changing the submodalities, the experience will change. Several books have been written about submodalities alone. It is a topic that requires professionally supervised training before you can use it fully and with other people. In this audiobook, we will cover some of the key elements so that you can use submodalities for yourself at work. Please note that, as with all topics covered in this audiobook, submodalities are to be used for relatively minor situations and responses, not major emotional issues like raging anger or phobias. A little more about submodalities. You will probably have heard people use phrases at work such as, "Put that idea to one side," "The dim and distant past," "The picture is fuzzy," "I hear you loud and clear," "This is a big problem weighing heavily on my shoulders." Each of these phrases indicates some key submodalities that the speaker is using, even though the speaker almost certainly doesn't realize it. Table 9.1, available in the companion PDF to this audiobook, shows a list of the main submodalities, grouped under visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. Some of the submodalities are on a spectrum, known as analog, such as brightness, bright as the sun, dim as a coal mine or anything in between, and volume, almost silent to almost deafening, and some are either or, known as digital, for example, three-dimensional or flat, associated or dissociated. When you change certain submodalities, it will make little or no difference to the way you feel about the situation or event, because for you, when thinking about the specific situation, these submodalities are not important. When you change others, it will make a difference, either positive or negative. These are called critical submodalities. There will be one or two submodalities that, when you change them, will be so important that all the other submodalities will change, and your experience of the situation will change significantly. These are called driver submodalities. Though there are some submodalities that tend to be significant for most people, it is important to recognize that you are unique, and the specific submodalities that impact you might be different from those for someone else. The driver or critical submodalities for any given situation in which you are involved might be different from those for another situation in which you are involved. So treat each situation uniquely. Exercise 9.1, approximately 5 minutes. As an introduction to submodalities, choose a pleasant work experience, either a past positive work memory, or a situation you are looking forward to, or a work task you like doing. As you think of the event, get a picture of it in your mind, and notice the main submodality aspects, visual, and if relevant, auditory and kinesthetic of the events. Refer to Table 9.1 in the companion PDF beforehand. Make a note quickly of any submodalities that you particularly notice. Making a note of submodalities is known as eliciting submodalities. Tip 9.1. Elicit submodalities as quickly as possible and resist any possible temptation to overanalyze. By their very nature, submodalities occur almost instantly as we think about a particular topic. Doing this quickly helps you to elicit the submodalities as they truly are. Using submodalities. There are two main methods of using submodalities. Method 1. This is called mapping across. In essence, you change the critical submodalities of the current undesired response to those of the desired response. This has the effect of giving the current response the same submodalities and therefore the same meaning as the desired response. To illustrate this, I will use the example of a business consultant who wanted to be able to make cold calls comfortably, someone who had the capability but just didn't feel comfortable doing it. Preparation phase. 1. Identify a current undesired response, for example, feeling uncomfortable at the thought of making a cold call. If it helps, score on a scale of 1 to 10 how comfortable you feel about doing it. 1 is very uncomfortable, 10 is very comfortable. 2. Decide what your ideal score would be and identify a similar type of work activity where your responses are close to that score, that is, the desired response, for example, phoning a work colleague. It is essential to pick a topic in the same context as the undesired response. In this case, both involve making work phone calls. 3. Do the ecology check, Chapter 3, to ensure that there are no or only minor negative consequences of responding to cold calls in the same way as you respond to, in this example, calling colleagues, and that there are significant benefits, which far outweigh any possible drawbacks. Intervention. 1. Think of cold calling. Make a picture, and then, using the following table, Table 9.2, available in the companion PDF to this audiobook, very quickly, remember Tip 9.1, make a note of the main visual submodalities in Column 1. Ask yourself if there are any sounds that are important, and if so, elicit and make a note of the auditory submodalities. Repeat with the kinesthetic submodalities. I suggest that you use abbreviations where possible to help you do this quickly. Example, B for black and white. 2. Clear your mind and then repeat the process, this time with calling a colleague rather than cold calling, and make a note of the main submodalities in column 2. 3. Mark with an asterisk any differences between the two sets of submodalities. This is known in NLP as contrastive analysis. 4. Bring back to mind the picture of cold calling. For the submodalities that are different, that is, the critical submodalities, one by one, change each cold calling submodality to the same as the corresponding one for calling a colleague. For example, if the cold calling picture is small and the calling a colleague picture is large, make the cold calling picture large in your mind. Continue this process quickly with all submodalities marked with an asterisk. You might find that there are one or two submodalities that, when you change them, cause the others to change too. This is because these are the driver submodalities. 5. Check how you feel about cold calling. It should now be the same as that for calling a colleague. Then, internally lock into place the submodality changes you have just made. Some people do this visually, by visualizing the changes being locked. Others do this in an auditory way, perhaps by imagining the sound of a food container being closed, or in a kinesthetic way by, for example, imagining the feel of tying something into place. Do it in a way that works effectively for you. 6. Mentally rehearse making cold calls, that is, the desired new behavior, in several scenarios. This is known as future pacing, when, having just used the NLP technique, you envisage yourself in the future situation, and several different scenarios of these future situations, and notice how your responses are different now compared to how they were. Many successful business people and athletes use this type of visualization of future scenarios. Method 2. This can be quicker and involves a slightly more try-it-and-see approach. The preparation phase is the same as in the first method. Intervention. Think of the current undesired response, nerves about cold calling. 2. Make a picture of cold calling and change one visual submodality and notice whether it makes it better, worse, or whether there is no change. If there is no change, change it back to how it was. If you chose a digital submodality, such as color or black and white, or three-dimensional or flat, and it makes it worse, change it back to how it was. If changing an analog submodality, such as distance, size, or brightness, makes it worse, change it to the opposite extreme and notice the impact. For example, if making the picture smaller makes your response worse, return it to the size it was and then make it bigger. 3. Retain any positive submodality changes and keep going until your score and response is how you want it to be. Then, internally, lock into place the submodality changes you have just made. 4. Mentally rehearse future pace making cold calls, that is, the desired new behavior, in several scenarios. Because this is a try-it-and-see approach, I suggest that you start with the following submodalities, available in Table 9.3 in the companion PDF, as these tend to be more powerful before moving on to the others if required. Under Visual, the submodalities Size, Location, Brightness, Distance, and Associated or Dissociated. Under Auditory, the submodalities of Location, Direction of Movement, Volume, Loud or Soft, Speed, Fast or Slow. Under Kinesthetic, Location, Size, Shape, Intensity of Feeling, Movement, Speed, Texture, Rough or Smooth, Temperature. Tip 9.2. Generally, making the following submodality changes will increase the impact of a situation. That is, make it more pleasant if it is a pleasant experience, and vice versa. Making pictures bigger, brighter, closer, more focused, three-dimensional, associated, in color, and higher. Making sounds come toward you, louder, not too loud. Making feelings bigger, smoother, warmer, not too hot, have greater intensity. Generally, the reverse will be true to lessen the impact. Exercise 9.2, approximately 5 to 15 minutes. Pick a situation or response that you have at work that you would like to change. See the Why Is This So Useful section at the beginning of this chapter for some ideas. Choose one of the two methods outlined in the previous section and do this exercise. Method 1 tends to be more thorough as it targets specific submodality changes, although it might take a little longer because you are working with two sets of submodalities. Method 2 is more random, as you are guessing which submodalities are important. Once you become more familiar with working with your submodalities, you will be better able to know which ones are likely to be critical or driver submodalities, and hence be able to start with those, which can speed up the process. A word about association and dissociation. One of the more useful submodalities is association-dissociation. As a general rule, when people are associated into an event, that is, seeing, hearing, and feeling it as if it were happening right now, they feel it much more than if they are dissociated from it, that is, as if it were happening on a TV or cinema screen. If you happen to think of a situation that causes you some negative feelings, such as feeling overwhelmed or nervous, one thing you can do to gain a more balanced perspective is to step back from the situation so that you can see yourself in it. From this dissociated position, you can take a more considered view of what to do and how to respond. Applications of submodalities at work. We have touched on various situations where this technique can be useful. Other applications include the following. Goal setting. You can change the submodalities to make your goal even more compelling. Also, when thinking about future work goals, once you have associated into achieving the goal and felt how good it is often more compelling and motivating to then make the picture slightly dissociated so that you can see yourself achieving the goal rather than associated having already achieved it, which could cause a loss of motivation. Selling and advertising. You can use some of the language of submodalities, linked to predicates, to make your product more appealing. For example, if you look closely at our new product. Closely implies that the picture is near. Presentations, interviews, meetings, or any work situation where you feel less positive than you would like? Adjust the submodalities when you think of the situation to make the feeling just right for you. Chapter 10. The Right State. How to create it for you and others. You cannot control what happens to you, but you can control your attitude towards what happens to you. And in that, you will be mastering change rather than allowing it to master you. Brian Tracy, author, entrepreneur, and motivational speaker. In the last chapter, we looked at how you can change your internal representations to lead to changes in behaviors and results. In this chapter, we will be covering how to change your state and influence other people's states, which, as you will remember from the communication model, is another way to change behaviors and results. The NLP term for managing state is known as anchoring. Why is anchoring so useful? Being able to change your own state and influence other people's states is useful before and during many work situations where you might feel a little nervous or anxious, including interviewers, both as interviewer and interviewee, presentations, negotiations, meetings, appraisals. The process of setting an anchor for yourself so that you can get into the right state whenever you want to typically takes 10 to 15 minutes, which is a small investment of time for such a large benefit. Anchoring can also be used where you want to help other people to access and feel certain states, such as managing people regarding the previous activities, advertising and marketing, selling. Please note that, as with submodalities, anchoring is to be used in situations where the current problem is relatively minor and related to specific situations. Feeling a little anxious before an interview is relatively common. Feeling wild panic or feeling anxious all the time is outside the scope of this audiobook. An overview of anchoring. An anchor is defined in NLP as a stimulus that leads to a response in other people or yourself. One of the earliest and best-known exponents of anchoring was the Russian physiologist Ivan Pavlov, whose famous experiment with dogs in 1904 showed how they could be trained to respond to certain present stimuli. Anchoring could be regarded as an entirely natural human response, and anchors can be set using any or all of the representational systems. You automatically respond, positively or negatively, to a variety of events, such as the sound of your favorite upbeat music, or at work, the voice of your boss, or most important customer, the sight of your best friend's face, or at work, seeing the managing director walk into the building, the smell of freshly ground coffee, or at work, the perfume or aftershave of your boss, the feel of your favorite freshly ironed shirt or blouse as you get dressed for an important interview, the taste of apple pie like your grandmother used to make. One of the principles of anchoring is that you can create your own stimulus response mechanisms for yourself and even create or evolve states in other people. If you remember a time when you felt, for example, really excited and relive that specific event, your state will intensify, reach a peak, typically for 5 to 15 seconds, and then you will return to your everyday baseline state. If you link the peak of the state to a specific movement, such as squeezing your thumb and index finger together, and repeat this process a few times, the state, excitement in this case, and the movement will become neurologically linked, so that if you repeat the thumb-finger movement before or during a business meeting, you will feel in the state you have anchored, that is, excited. How to create an anchor for yourself. We will now move on to look at how you can set your own anchor for use in the type of work situations mentioned earlier, or guide someone else through the process. Tip 10.1. Please listen to the next two sections thoroughly, and probably more than once, so that you are very clear how to do the process before actually setting the anchor in yourself or someone else. Please refer to the process and follow the process closely, so that you get the desired result from the anchoring technique. The five keys to anchoring. Before we discuss how to actually set an anchor, it's important to discuss the five key points to successful anchoring. 1. Intensity When you fire, that is, activate or trigger the anchor before or during the interview, for example, it will only be as strong as the experiences you used when setting the anchor originally. So assuming that you want to be able to feel highly confident, for example, then when you do the anchoring process, use situations when you felt highly or intensely confident. 2. Timing. In order to anchor effectively, it is important that you capture the peak of the state by setting or applying the anchor as the state nears its peak, that is, at its most intense, and then releasing the anchor just after the peak. Typically, the peak lasts 5 to 15 seconds, although, depending on the individual, it can vary from 1 to 2 seconds to a minute. 3. Uniqueness of the anchor. The stimulus should be so unique that it is easy to set and will not be fired or activated accidentally. Anchors on the palm of the hand, for example, will be constantly triggered when shaking hands at work and will probably lose their impact, whereas squeezing the tip of your thumb and index finger on your left hand or squeezing a specific finger knuckle are probably unique movements for most people. 4. Replicability of the anchor. It is essential that you can fire the anchor whenever you need to. Holding your left ankle with your right hand is probably unique, but not replicable before or during an interview or presentation. Pressing your thumb and index finger together, or touching a specific knuckle, are probably replicable during most situations. Other people present would probably not notice you doing it, and even if they did, would not think twice about it. 5. Number of times the anchoring is done. When doing the anchoring process, typically doing it between 4 and 6 times will be more powerful and long-lasting compared to doing it once or twice. A useful mnemonic to remember the key points of intensity, timing, uniqueness, replicability, and number of times anchoring is done is the acronym ITURN, or ITURN. The 7 steps to anchoring. There are 7 steps to setting an anchor. The process is sometimes known as setting a resource anchor. 1. Ensure you are clear about the anchoring process, that is, these 7 steps and the 5 keys, and decide on the desired state or states to be anchored. For example, confident, motivated, powerful. Assume that confident is the desired state for this exercise, and how you will anchor it. I suggest that you use a kinesthetic anchor, such as squeezing your finger and thumb together or squeezing a knuckle. Physical movements tend to be more effective and replicable, although it is possible to make an internal sound or see an image in your mind. Remember the R of ITURN. It needs to be replicable. An external sound or picture might not always be available to you. Do an ecology check, see Chapter 3, to ensure that it is appropriate for you to have this resource anchor. 2. Recall a vivid past experience of an event where you felt one of these desired states. Pick one feeling or emotion at a time, for example, confident, and then one past experience that relates to that emotion. If for some reason you cannot think of a time when you felt, for example, confident, give yourself a little time. Sometimes people cannot immediately come up with a situation, but when they think of one, other memories start flooding back. If that does not work, pretend. Our unconscious mind does not know the difference between an actual event and a vividly imagined one. 3. Make sure you are really associated into that event. In other words, you are reliving it as if you were there right now, not merely thinking about it. See what you are seeing, that is, as if it were really happening right now. Hear what you are hearing and really feel the feelings of being totally confident. 4. Anchor, that is, apply the stimulus, for example, pressing your thumb and index finger together at the peak of the experience, and release after the peak. 5. Change state. Think about something neutral to clear your mind. This is known as breaking state. 6. Repeat steps 2 to 5 around 4 to 6 times. If you want to anchor 3 states, I suggest that you use 2 examples of each of the 3 states, making 6 in total. If you want only 1 state, repeat the process 4 to 6 times with the same state, either choosing the same vivid experience, step 2, or different ones. Use the same anchor, for example, thumb and index finger each time. This is known as stacking anchors. 7. Test by firing or activating the anchor, For example, pressing your thumb and index finger together, and notice how you feel. Tip 10.2. Do an interim test, step 7, after you have done 2 rounds of anchoring, so that if for some reason you are not doing the anchoring process correctly, you will be able to make changes earlier to save time rather than doing all 6 rounds. A word about future pacing. If you have set a resource anchor for a specific event, such as a presentation to an important client, incorporate future pacing in step 7, mentioned in chapter 9. When you future pace the anchor, it is useful to do 2 types of visualizations. The first is dissociated, in other words, seeing yourself making the presentation as if on a TV or cinema screen. You fire your anchor, and at the same time, see yourself in the picture making the presentation with the resources you anchored. The second type is associated, in other words, imagining that you are in the situation as if looking through your own eyes, again with the anchor fired. With both types, you can do it with your eyes open or closed. With dissociated visualization, you can often notice aspects of how you are behaving or performing, what you are doing or not doing to help the situation go well. Some people find one type more useful than the other. Find which type or types work best for you. An additional important point when future pacing is to consider several different scenarios where in each scenario you are feeling the anchored states and hence performing the way you want. The benefit of future pacing different scenarios is that you can be prepared for almost any eventualities, not just preparing for things going perfectly. Negotiators and audiences sometimes pose challenging questions. This will make you feel even more confident about the event. Therefore, do dissociated future pacing on several scenarios with your anchor fired. This typically takes between 1 and 2 minutes, as you will be able to speed up the situations in your mind. And then, a few seconds afterward, repeat it using associated future pacing for the same scenarios. A final comment about anchoring yourself. If you have already created positive associations with certain visual, auditory, or kinesthetic stimuli, have access to them where possible. For example, have a picture of your children on your desk or screensaver. Have certificates or pictures of medals on the wall of your office. Have access to your favorite pieces of music, uplifting or calming, in case you need a boost before a meeting or to calm down afterward. If you have a particular item of clothing that makes you feel special when you wear it, you can wear it for important meetings. Exercise 10.1, approximately 10 to 15 minutes for each type of anchor. Using the previous anchoring process, 7 steps to anchoring, and possibly supplemented by pictures or music, create 2 main types of anchor, an uplifting, positive one, and a relaxing, calming one. Anchoring other people at work. As a manager, you can use the process explained in the previous sections to help a colleague set their own resource anchor. You can also anchor people in other ways in the workplace. Remember, you can anchor using any or all of the representational systems. You can anchor spatially. For example, when making a presentation, you can be in one spot when talking about the past, in another spot when talking about the present, and in another spot when you talk about the future. Ideally, these 3 spots would be to the left, center, and right of the stage as the audience looks at you. Having set up these 3 anchors spatially, you can either point to or revisit these spots as appropriate during the presentation to subtly indicate to the audience which time frame you are talking about. Similarly, you could anchor certain states or responses spatially when presenting. For example, talking about an exciting event from one spot and about a negative event from a different spot. You can revisit each spot as appropriate during the presentation to fire the anchor, that is, recreate the state in the audience. You can use stories and metaphors, Chapter 7, to help elicit and create a state in other people, for example, by telling an amusing story or an inspirational one. You can use gestures, words, or voice tonality to anchor others in meetings. For example, when selling, if the client or prospect talks about or shows a certain emotion or response, anchor it with a gesture. When relevant, you can fire the anchor, that is, repeat the gesture later. Story 10.1. Several years ago, I was running a 1-day sales training course. By this point, I was an experienced trainer, performing certain aspects of presentations automatically. At the start of the session, I made an amusing comment and the audience laughed. And as they were laughing, I stepped forward slightly on one foot and made a small gesture. A few moments later, the audience were laughing about something, and I made the same movement and gesture. A minute or so later, I inadvertently made the same movement and gesture as I was talking about a mildly amusing situation, and the audience started laughing. At that point, I realized fully how powerful anchoring can be with groups. Exercise 10.2. Approximately 5 to 10 minutes. Make a list of states that could be useful to anchor in other people in your role at work. For example, curiosity, for example, about how competitors or customers will respond, excitement, and ready to take action. Pick one or two states and choose a way that you could subtly anchor it in others, a gesture, a word, a facial expression, tone of voice, and experiment with it in a suitable working situation. Dealing with negative anchors at work. Just as there are positive anchors, sometimes negative anchors are created. For example, you might feel a little anxious when you hear a particular colleague's voice or when you go into a particular office because of a previous experience. Again, this explanation is for a relatively minor negative situation. There is a specific NLP technique called collapse anchors, which can be used with an individual and for which specialized NLP training is required. You can use the collapse anchor principles for yourself. Here is a brief summary of the process. 1. Set a positive, strong resource anchor and/or have a picture or hold a small object that creates a really strong positive state for you. 2. The next time you are in the situation where the negative anchor is activated, fire the strong positive anchor and keep doing so until the negative state disappears. Story 10.2. One of my business coaching clients felt anxious whenever he heard his boss approach his desk. I knew that he deeply loved his children and felt wonderful whenever he looked at their photo, remembering them saying, "I love you, Daddy." I suggested that the next time he heard his boss approaching, he hold and look at the picture and remember his children saying, "I love you, Daddy." He felt so good when this happened that it negated the previous negativity of his boss coming into the office, not just for that meeting, but for all subsequent ones with him. This meant that he was able to deal with his boss in an appropriate way, rather than based on a pre-triggered negative state. Applications of anchoring at work. There are various applications of anchoring at work. Presenting. This includes preparing for the presentation, feeling resourceful during the presentation if there are difficult questions, and using spatial anchors. If you are speaking at a conference and there is a natural spot from where presenters speak, at a specific table or by the lectern, and if the previous speaker has in some way created a negative state in the audience, for example, disappointment or boredom, then, if possible, present from a spot that is different from that of the previous speaker. When you see the audience to be in a good state, you can then move to the natural presenting spot. This acts as a collapse anchor. You can also use a story or metaphor to help create this positive state in the audience. Training. As well as some of the items previously mentioned, you can use music as an anchor to let the group know that the exercise or break has finished. Also, if your courses are spread over modules, you can put the wall charts in the same place as for the previous module, so that delegates immediately feel familiar with the training room. Marketing and advertising. The use of advertising jingles and corporate logos can act as a stimulus that leads to a response in customers. For example, many advertisements seek to create in customers feelings of being attractive and successful, and then link these feelings to their product, logo, and jingle. Coaching or managing. This includes helping clients and colleagues feel at their best in preparation for important meetings or interviews. Chapter 11. Seeing Other Perspectives. A Key to Understanding and Insight. You have got to get along with people, but you also have to recognize that the strength of a team is different people with different perspectives and different personalities. Steve Case, co-founder and former CEO of AOL. By this point in the audiobook, you will be very aware that each of us sees the world in our own unique way. One of the keys to success in business is being able to see situations from other perspectives, not just from your own. The NLP technique known as perceptual positions helps you to do this for yourself and also when seeking to influence others. In which situations is perceptual positions useful? For individuals, perceptual positions can be used to Prepare for meetings, such as with colleagues, customers or prospects, suppliers and interviewers. Assist you to set goals, Chapter 4. Prevent and overcome conflicts or misunderstandings. Coach colleagues or individual clients to do the above. Perceptual positions can be used on a more widespread or strategic level. Creative thinking, for example, designing consultancy solutions. According to Robert Diltz, one of the early NLP pioneers, Walt Disney used a form of perceptual positions to create his cartoon films. Strategic planning for departments, divisions, or whole organizations. Preparing for presentations to large groups. Key concepts. Clichés such as "put yourself in my shoes" and "there are three sides to every story, yours, mine, and the truth somewhere in between" give you an insight into the concepts of perceptual positions. Most people have experienced being stuck in their own thinking at some time in their career. This is usually because the person is seeing a situation purely from their own point of view at that particular moment. In NLP, we call this being in position one, or first position. The perspective of the other person or persons involved is called position two, or second position. The perspective of a neutral observer is called position three, or third position. The more easily you are able to detach yourself completely from position one and step into a pure position two and a pure position three, the more effective you will be at using this invaluable technique. On my training courses, I quite often hear delegates say that they can see other people's perspectives naturally. Yet, when they do the perceptual positions exercise, explained in the following section, they discover that the technique is even more powerful and useful than they imagined. The reasons for this will be covered later. The perceptual positions process. Let's assume for illustrative purposes that you are using this process for yourself to gain some tips and insight into how to prepare for an important meeting with your boss. Examples of other uses of perceptual positions will be covered in the applications sections later in this chapter. As with the submodality and anchoring interventions in the previous two chapters, be clear about what you want from the exercise, how you would know that you have it, and that it is ecological to make the desired changes. The process itself works as follows. Step 1. Mark out three spaces, or use three chairs on the floor, in the shape of an equilateral or isosceles triangle, in a room where you won't be disturbed. The chair or space at the bottom left corner of the triangle represents position 1. The space or chair at the apex of the triangle represents position 3, and the space or chair at the bottom right corner of the triangle is position 2. In this case, position 2 represents your boss, and position 3 represents a neutral observer. Step 2. Stand or sit in position 1 as yourself, looking at your boss in position 2, and ask yourself how you are feeling and what you are thinking as you face your boss. Typically, spend no more than a minute there, enough time to become aware of your feelings about the situation. Step 3. Go toward position 2, and when you are about halfway, break state by thinking of something completely unrelated in order to change your mindset from position 1. Break state was mentioned in step 5 of the 7-step anchoring process in chapter 10. Then, move to position 2, becoming your boss. As far as possible, adopt their physiology and posture, and become them. Remember from the NLP communication model how physiology impacts on state and internal representations. See tip 11.1 that follows. Spend as much time as you need, typically between 2 and 5 minutes, to gain insights into what your boss is thinking and feeling about the situation as they look at you in position 1. Ask yourself questions such as, what do I want from your name in this meeting? What would you like to say to your name? What information would I like from your name? What else? Normally, there are useful insights in position 2. Step 4. When you have taken as many insights as you can, go towards position 3 and break state halfway, as you did between positions 1 and 2. Then move to position 3 as an independent observer of, an advisor to, the situation, and adopt the posture that you would if you were considering a situation that you were not involved in. Ask yourself, as the observer, questions such as, what advice would I give to both parties? What do I notice about the situation that perhaps those two people haven't yet noticed? What do they have in common? What are their common aims? If the person in position 1 did that, that is, the behavior suggested in the answer to a previous question in position 3, what impact would it have on the person in position 2, and vice versa? Ask any other questions that are relevant to the specific scenario. It is important to be neutral and at the same time to realize that only the person in position 1, that is you, can change as a direct result of this process. Make sure that position 3 is really detached from the other two positions, if necessary, by making sure that position 3 is physically moved further away. Spend as much time as needed to gain insights about the situation. Step 5. Take what you have learned from positions 2 and 3 and return to position 1, that is you. What actions will you take and when? How has this new information informed your actions, preparations, etc.? Ask yourself, to what extent have you achieved the outcomes you wanted from the exercise? Step 6. In the unlikely event that you have not achieved as much as you wanted from this exercise, revisit one or more of the positions again, or even create a fourth position somewhere further back from the three positions in order to take an even more detached perspective. Remember always to finish at position 1 so that you can incorporate what you have learned. Tip 11.1. Please note that it is important to alter your physiology as mentioned previously. Break state. Become the person in position 2, in this example, your boss, and become the neutral observer in position 3. The combination of moving to different locations and changing posture helps you to really identify with the different people and perceptual positions and consider it from their perspective, rather than doing it from your perspective of what they think. However, if it is not appropriate to move physically, for example, if this process is being done in a public place, you can do the process seated in chairs in conversation. It becomes even more important to break state between the three positions because there is no physical movement to a different spot. Applications for individual use. Here are some examples where you can use perceptual positions at work in situations that are of a more individual nature. In all cases, position 3 is a neutral observer, and the process would be as outlined earlier. You could do it for yourself, or guide a colleague through the process, or ask the colleague to guide you through the process once they have listened and understood it. Please note that it is essential that the person acting as the guide follows the process and resists any possible temptation to give opinions or ask leading questions. This process works best when the person being guided arrives at their own conclusions. Applications include selling, procurement, and negotiating. You could use this before the meeting to get a better idea of what your prospects, clients, or suppliers could be looking for, or which negotiating stances they might take. Your client or supplier is represented in position 2. During the meeting itself, you might want to get into the mindset of position 2 or position 3. This would be one of those situations where you would use the perceptual positions process or any relevant part of it while remaining in your seat. Interviewing. Again, you could do this to help prepare for the meeting. Position 2 represents the person interviewing you or who you are interviewing. Conflicts, misunderstandings, or dealing with challenging people. You could do this to help you see someone else's perspective to help you diffuse a situation. Not a major conflict or one where there are strong emotions attached. This is best done with the support of a qualified NLP professional. Please note that you would not do this in the presence of the person with whom you are in conflict. Do it by yourself so that you can really see their point of view. Position 2 represents the other person in the situation. Consider asking a colleague to guide you through the process, having first listened to and understood the process. Many NLP students say that having someone else asking the questions and having to verbalize the answers forces them to continue answering the questions in positions 2 and 3, and hence gain insights. It also forces them to commit to taking certain actions, step 5 of the process. If you are acting in a coaching capacity, you could guide your client through the process for situations like those in the three preceding paragraphs. Story 11.1. Simon, an NLP practitioner, was the human resources director for a large, publicly traded company. One of the directors was an extremely friendly man who happened to be naturally tactile. Unfortunately, a young female member of the staff perceived his natural manner as being sexual harassment and threatened to sue the company, which would have been a public relations disaster for them. Simon spent 15 to 20 minutes taking the director through the perceptual positions process as described earlier. The director really saw and felt how his behavior had impacted the young employee and felt sorry for his actions. Later that day, Simon repeated the process with the young woman. She realized that the director was just being friendly and was like this with everyone and meant no harm. The following day, Simon spoke to both of them together. The director apologized and the employee dropped her complaint. We can only guess how much this process saved the company in terms of its reputation, legal fees, and associated time taken. Applications for wider use. Here are some of the uses of perceptual positions where the situation involves more people or a larger group. We covered three main perceptual positions, but there is no limit to the number. In some of the examples that follow, there will be more than one position too, such as if there are different groups within an audience. Please apply the principles to your own situation. It is recognized that some of the following situations could be applied to individual situations, such as those mentioned earlier, and vice versa. Presentations to groups. If the audience is homogeneous, then one position too will be sufficient. However, if there are some subgroups, I suggest that you create a separate position too, position 2A, 2B, etc., when doing the exercise, with break states in between. For example, you might be presenting to an audience of professionals in which you might want to have a separate position for accountants, lawyers, surveyors, doctors, etc. Sometimes it is helpful to have a specific person in mind to represent each of the groups during the exercise. Strategic planning. You could create several position twos: customers, suppliers, competitors, employees, and shareholders. Position three could be an independent analyst in the city or Wall Street, or someone doing a consultative report into the position of your company within its market. Departmental planning. This would be broadly similar to the previous point, except that position twos would probably include other specific departments: marketing, finance, legal, etc. Product design and marketing. In the early stages of product development, you could create different position twos to represent the different target consumer groups. Making important decisions. You could create a separate position two for each of the main parties affected by the decision, then have position three as the independent consultant. Creative solutions. Walt Disney used a variation of the perceptual positions exercise when undertaking his creative thinking process. He would take his team into the dreamer room to think of the wackiest ideas they could think of, the critic room to think of why all these ideas might not work, and the realist room to pull together the ideas from the other rooms. Creative problem solving. Position one represents the current situation. Position two represents a time in the future when you have what you want or have solved the situation. And from position three, you can observe how you got from the present to the future. From position two, you can also give advice to yourself in the past. Using perceptual positions conversationally. Perceptual positions can be used conversationally with individuals or groups. For example, asking if the person's name were here now, what would he or she say? Or, if you were that person's name, how would you feel about this? Invites the person you are speaking with to go into position two. Position three thinking can be similarly created by asking, if you were advising someone else about this situation, what advice would you give them? Exercise 11.1, approximately 15 minutes. Think of a situation where it would be useful for you to have an insight into someone else's thinking about a topic. It does not need to be a major challenge, and you might find it useful to choose a relatively minor situation so that you can get used to the process. Do the perceptual positions exercise as explained in this chapter. Chapter 12. Changing the meaning of events. Turning negatives into positives and handling objections. In times of great stress or adversity, it's always best to keep busy, to plow your anger and your energy into something positive. Lee Iacocca, former president at Ford Motor Company and Chrysler. In part three so far, we have covered four NLP techniques: neurological levels, submodalities, anchoring, and perceptual positions, which require a formal or semi-formal process to be followed. In this chapter, we will cover how to quickly change your thinking or that of other people about a work situation that appears negative using a selection of just a few simple questions or statements. In NLP, this is known as reframing. Reframing is essentially making suggestions or statements with the intention of changing the interpretation of the situation. In which situations is reframing useful? Reframing is useful whenever you or someone else are thinking negatively about a situation. It is also the basis of handling objections in a sales context. Specific examples include selling, coaching, managing, presenting poor results, and negotiating. Key concepts. By the very nature of the word, reframing, there is an implicit idea that there is already a frame around an event or situation. From the communication model, you will recognize that the external events are filtered, that is, deleted, generalized, and in particular, distorted, through a set of beliefs and experiences, that is, a frame of reference, which leads to thoughts and feelings about the events. Consequently, there are rarely events or situations that are inherently bad. Events can be interpreted or explained in a variety of ways. Politicians and business leaders commenting on bad news are usually well-versed in the art of spin. For example, if a company announces annual profits that are lower than last year, many people will view that as a disappointing set of results. That is the frame or context through which it has been viewed. Reframing helps you and other people to explain or perceive the results in a more positive light. Chapter 13 considers in greater depth the different ways to change beliefs. You can reframe other people conversationally, and you can reframe yourself by changing the way you think. Tip 12.1. Because events can be interpreted in many ways, as far as you reasonably can, without being delusional, interpret situations and events in ways that empower you the most. The two main types of reframing. There are two main types of reframing. Context reframes, meaning or content reframes. Let's take each in turn. Context reframe. A context reframe is where you consider the same specific behavior or event in a different context, such as a different time period or different situation, leading to a more positive assessment of the behavior or event. To do a context reframe, you ask yourself, what, where, when would be a different context or situation or place where this behavior or event would be acceptable or even positive? For example, someone's keenness to make sure that colleagues are happy at work might be seen as fussing or a nuisance, but if they were working in a customer services role such as a waiter or air steward, that is, a different situation or context, it would be a big advantage. Examples of different contexts include different time periods, for example, the future, different organizations you'll work for or jobs you'll have in the future, and different cultures or locations. Meaning or content reframe. A meaning or content reframe is where you consider a different and more positive meaning of the same behavior. To do a meaning or content reframe, ask yourself, what else could this behavior or event mean? Or, what's a more positive interpretation of the event? For example, if a boss sometimes shouts at their team, it could be interpreted as being aggressive, which is negative, or it could be interpreted as being motivated and passionate, which is positive. Tip 12.2. A useful way to do a meaning reframe is to change an important word. For example, if a customer says that your service is too expensive, you could reframe the word expensive and reply, we offer a premium product at a price you would expect. I expand on this later in this chapter when covering how to handle objections. Practical tips for reframing. To repeat an earlier point, reframing is essentially making suggestions or statements with the intention of changing the interpretation of the situation. If the person you are speaking to does not take on board the different way of looking at the situation, there's no problem, because, after all, you're just voicing a thought. That said, there are some important guidelines for reframing other people that will significantly increase the likelihood of their accepting your reframe. Please ensure that 1. You have permission, implicit or explicit, to reframe the person. For example, as a coach or trusted colleague, you would almost certainly have permission. If you are not sure, ask something like, is it okay if I offer you another perspective on this? Or, are you okay to talk more about this? I have coached clients who have been irritated by someone at work who was trying to put a positive spin on an event, almost certainly with the best of intentions, yet it was not the right time to do so, or my client simply didn't want that particular person to do so. 2. The person is open to being reframed. Most people have had moments when they are upset or annoyed, and any further discussion at that moment would not be helpful. 3. You are in rapport with the other person. Sometimes reframes can appear flippant or humorous, so make sure that you are in rapport. Chapter 5. 4. The reframe is plausible. It does not have to be true, merely a plausible alternative view of the situation. 5. You say the reframe as if you believe it, particularly given the previous point about rapport. 6. You have some knowledge of how the situation is a problem for the other person, so that you can choose a reframe that is appropriate for the other person, based on their point of view, rather than choose one from yours. This links to the NLP presupposition of respecting other people's point of view. See Chapter 3. Where practical, ask the person how the situation is a problem for them. 7. Use common sense. Unless you are really skilled and qualified, reframing is best used for relatively minor situations. Generally, a reframe would be worded as follows. Well, at least you'll be able to. Isn't it great that she'll be able to? So now, at least you'll be able to. So at least you won't have to. Thank goodness you're not. Perhaps he hasn't. Has. Isn't. Is. Can't. Please note that reframing is not about giving advice. It is simply about asking the person to consider a different way of thinking about the event. Here are some examples of reframing in business. I'm annoyed because my boss gives me more work than other members of the team. Possible reframe 1. Perhaps they think you're better able to cope than the other members of the team. Meaning reframe changes the interpretation of the behavior. Possible reframe 2. Isn't it great that they trust you to get stuff done? Meaning reframe. Possible reframe 3. It may seem like a nuisance now, but when you go for your next promotion, you'll be glad you had all this experience, won't you? Context reframe, looking at a different time horizon. Possible reframe 4. At least you've got a job. Meaning reframe. It's so boring filling out all these job applications. Possible reframe 1. At least there are lots of possible jobs for you to go for. Meaning reframe. Possible reframe 2. Won't you be glad you did this when you've got the job you want? Context reframe. Possible reframe 3. Doing this shows how committed you are to your own success and will stand you in good stead in your future career. Meaning and context reframe. Exercise 12.1. Practice reframing. If you feel confident, do so with clients and colleagues. If you don't yet feel ready to reframe in real life, you can practice as follows. Listen to interviews, read newspapers, or watch the news, and, in your mind, put a positive spin on events. Find a willing partner. Ask the other person to tell you a relatively minor challenge they are facing, and ask, how is that a problem for you? Once you have an idea of how it is a problem for the person, decide quickly on a couple of possible reframes and deliver the reframe. Using sensory acuity, Chapter 5, notice the impact of each reframe. Ask for feedback regarding how the reframes felt and how they could be improved. Handling objections. The principles of reframing can be used to handle objections, for example, in a sales context. Here are some ways to do so, using the following 2 objections as examples. 1. Your business has only been going for 2 years, so you don't have enough experience for us. 2. You're too expensive. When hearing the reframes that follow, remember that these are suggestions and that not all of them will be relevant in all situations. Remember to use common sense. Example response 1 refers to objection 1, the business only going for 2 years and not having enough experience. Example response 2 refers to objection 2, too expensive. Type. Redefine some of the key terms or concepts. Example response 1. It's because we are so new to this market that we can come up with innovative solutions with our fresh approach. Example response 2. This is a premium price for a premium product. Or, this is a long-term investment. Type. Tell a metaphor or story. Example response 1. One of our existing clients loved the fresh approach and innovative solutions and made a 20% efficiency improvement as a result. Example response 2. One of our clients saved more than the cost of our product in the first quarter. Type. Give a counterexample. Example response 1. Microsoft was a young company once. Example response 2. Have you ever bought anything which seemed a little more than you wanted to pay, but which proved to be a great investment? Type. Apply the objection to itself. Example responses 1. With your years of experience, I'm sure you found examples of when young companies have provided excellent service. Or, with your experience, you've probably found that experience can blind people to new alternatives. Example response 2. That could be a costly or expensive idea in the long run. Type. Get specific. Example response 1. Exactly how long would you expect a business to be around before it's experienced enough for you? Example response 2. Exactly how much more is this than you would want to pay? Then, deal with this smaller amount rather than the whole amount. Type. Link to something more important. Example response 1. Isn't it more important to have new, fresh, and leading ideas that will help you to mention a value they have told you, such as being a market leader? Example response 2. Isn't it more important to blank than to concern yourself with a relatively small amount of money? Type. Think outside the box. Example response 1. Although the company may be new, the lead consultants have 30 years' experience between them. Example response 2. In 5 years' time, you'll see this investment as money well spent. This topic is explored in more detail in Robert Dilts' book, Sleight of Mouth, The Magic of Conversational Belief Change. Applications for individual use. You can reframe yourself or your colleagues in the following types of situation. Stimulating clients' or colleagues' thinking. Examples include where they do not know what to do next or can see only a small number of alternatives, in which case reframing can help them think outside the box. Managing staff, to help provide a rationale for taking a particular course of action. Turning disappointments into opportunities. Examples include not winning a sale, not being successful at a job interview, and not getting a promotion. Overcoming challenges. Examples include responding to other people's inefficiency or apparent intransigence and meeting deadlines. Making unpleasant tasks seem more pleasant. Doing routine work such as filing, difficult conversations with colleagues or customers. Handling objections. For example, when selling or persuading colleagues about your ideas. Applications for wider use. You can also reframe in these situations. Handling objections when presenting to groups. Examples include pitching for large-scale contracts and answering questions from attendees or delegates at a training seminar. Training staff to handle customer queries. Customer-facing staff can be taught how to reframe. Press releases. If there is some bad news, such as poor profit figures, you can use the principles of reframing to paint the situation in the most positive way. Chapter 13. Changing Beliefs: Simple and Powerful Ways to Alter Your Thinking. Whether you think that you can or that you can't, you are usually right. Henry Ford, founder of the Ford Motor Company. As you know, beliefs are a key filter in creating your internal reality. There are many belief change techniques in NLP. In this chapter, we will build on the reframing work from the previous chapter and cover how to change beliefs conversationally. Why is belief change so useful? given that beliefs play such a powerful role in defining your results, being able to change your own negative or limiting beliefs, or those of others, can help to improve work results, coach or manage others to improve their results, enable you or others to fulfill potential at work. Key concepts. Beliefs can be defined as our best current thinking about a topic, or those convictions that we hold as being true. When someone else has a belief, we usually refer to it as an opinion. Yet when we have a belief, we tend to call it the truth. Beliefs, therefore, can be positive and empowering, or limiting and disempowering. If you have an empowering belief, for example, I am a good salesperson, manager, designer, or I can learn new skills easily, then keep it. If you have a limiting belief, for example, the opposite of the empowering beliefs mentioned previously, then this chapter will show you some ways to change it. Please note that limiting beliefs that have a major negative consequence are outside the scope of this audiobook and are best addressed by NLP practitioners, coaches, or in more extreme cases, counselors with suitable training. A limiting belief is one that will in some way limit you from being, doing, or having what you want to be, do, or have. Such beliefs could be about you or your capabilities, I am not able to sell, or I don't come across well at interviews. Other people, you can't trust accountants, or all bosses treat staff badly. The world at large, people are selfish, life always kicks you when you're down. Here are some tips to help you identify limiting beliefs. 1. Feelings that you can't actually feel because it's not an emotion, and where you could replace the word feel with believe, such as, I feel people don't like me, or I feel I need to worry before a presentation. 2. Negations, such as, I'm not able to learn new things, or I can't have a successful career. 3. Comparisons, such as, I can't make enough money, or I'm not clever enough. 4. Necessity words, have to, got to, should, must, need to, such as, I have to know all the answers, or I should phone all my customers, even the unprofitable ones. Exercise 13.1, approximately 2 to 10 minutes. Make a list of any key limiting beliefs that you have which limit your career or business progress. Pick one at a time and go through the next section with this belief in mind, with the intention of changing the belief. Please be mindful of the difference between a limiting belief, future implications, and a statement of fact, past or present-based. It may be true that your colleague has never done a presentation. It is a limiting belief that they can't become good at presenting. Tip 13.1. Please also bear in mind the neurological levels model from Chapter 8 and the link between confidence, that is belief, and competence, that is capabilities. Believing that you can do something that you cannot is probably stupid or even dangerous. Would you want your tax affairs managed by a confident person who knows nothing about taxation? Changing beliefs conversationally. Here are some ways to reduce the impact of, or even to remove completely, minor limiting beliefs, either yours or those of your colleagues. Not all of these will be relevant for every belief. Look for counterexamples, Chapter 12, Handling Objections. Ask yourself, where or when has this belief not been true, either for me or for other people? One of my clients believed that she couldn't present well to groups. I challenged her, and she was then able to name several situations where she had presented effectively to groups, which led to her changing her belief. Use perceptual positions, Chapter 11. Often putting yourself in someone else's shoes, Position 2, or imagining it as a neutral observer, Position 3, will change how you perceive the situation. For example, I asked a financial advisor client, faced with a belief that he didn't know how to expand his business, what advice he would give someone else in the same situation, Position 3. After a pause, he made several really useful suggestions. Use reframing, Chapter 12. Look for the positive elements in the situation. How could this situation be useful to you? What are the positives from this? Check your reality. Sometimes we make assumptions and then start believing them. It could be worth asking yourself, how do I know this belief is true? Or even, how do I know this belief isn't false? increase your capabilities. If we think back to Chapter 8 and the neurological levels alignment, limiting beliefs may result from a lack of skills. Using the example of the presenter before, even if she were not able to do effective presentations, learning additional presentation skills would probably have helped her. Pretend. Ask yourself, what would someone who could do this do? How would they act? And then do that. Fake it until you make it. One of the principles of NLP is to model excellence by replicating the behaviors of someone who is excellent. Model yourself. Ask yourself where or when you have been faced with a similar challenge, possibly in a different context, that you successfully dealt with. How did you do that? Which strategies, states, and attitudes could you replicate in this situation? For example, you might believe that you are not good at making presentations at work, yet you gave a great speech as the best man at your friend's wedding. How did you do that? Use the mindset for success. Revisit the positive beliefs and the principles for success, Chapter 3. Behave as if these were true. Remember to be at cause. Use your resource anchor. One of my clients was about to attend an interview for a job that she and many other candidates really wanted and about which she was really nervous. She believed that the interviewers would ask her questions that she wouldn't be able to answer. She used her resource anchor, Chapter 10, and was able to handle all the questions appropriately, even when she didn't know the answer. She got the job. What's your purpose? Refer to some of the goal-setting questions, Chapter 4. Sometimes, getting in touch with your values, sense of identity or purpose, Chapter 8, will help you find the motivation to overcome a limiting belief. Remember, the higher neurological levels tend to be more powerful than the lower ones. You have changed beliefs before. You have probably believed at some time that you couldn't do something, yet found later that you could. Think now of several times when you have done this. For example, unexpectedly won a large contract or got promoted. Could the current limiting belief simply be another example of a belief that you will realize in the future was not true? Applications for individual use. You can change your own limiting beliefs or help individual colleagues and clients do so in almost every area of work, for example, sales, presentations, or going for a new job. Applications for wider use. You can use these principles with groups, for example, to help motivate staff after bad financial results, or to increase self-belief in a group when running a training course.